425 Moravia Park Drive. I'm sorry, we're not live. We're doing the Grace Hour podcast here in Baltimore, Maryland. My name is Avery Powers, and this is a pre-recorded podcast. Usually it is live, but we are here with Pastor Brad Hambrick from Raleigh, North Carolina, from the church Summit Church in Durham, North Carolina. And Pastor Brad has enjoyed being here and has been great to listen to and hear his take on and his wisdom that he has in counseling and all these different things that he's been teaching. So today we are talking about we're carrying on the conversation that was from yesterday, right? If you wouldn't mind just summarizing what you spoke about on the previous podcast with Pastor Steve Angelonis.
Yeah, so I think what we're going to talk about today is part two. Part one was talking about lament. When we've been through something devastating or traumatic, like what is that initial response? And we talked about a kind of three phase in our sense of identity after something of that magnitude. Then initially, it's right, it's not pejorative, to understand that there's a time period in which we're a victim. We're in need of care. That intervention, protection, that is the appropriate thing that God wants to give to us. And too often that word victim is used in just a negative, kind of as an insult. And so we said there's a time period where we're a victim, and there's nothing we need to be embarrassed about with that. Then we move to survivor. We're no longer in the immediate danger from whatever the climactic event was. But we do need to recover. That event still has impact. It still has aftershock, echoes, whatever we would want to call it. And mitigating that impact is, it's the call of that season when we are survivor. And we want to come to the point where we're steward, where we are more interested in what is ahead of us, what God has in store, than what is behind us. And so in some ways, as we talk about resilience, that is kind of the continuation of lament. Lament is good. It is healthy. It is part of recovering from painful events. But lament is not where we want to stay. We want to move from lament towards resilience.
That's beautiful. And so when we're talking about resilience and in going through difficult things, what would you say? I mean, the timing of these things can be different in circumstances and context and in various. One person might be very resilient to trauma or to a suffering. Another person might be almost like a lifetime. Would you say that that's something that you've experienced with encountering people that are going through various types of suffering, or is there a more appropriate time frame that you would see someone going through these processes?
Again, you know me, I like a metaphor or a parallel example. So if we ask the question, how long should it take somebody to get over a car accident? Like, is there a time frame if somebody's been through a car accident that this is the right time frame that it should take before they're like back on their feet and driving without any sense of distraction or feeling sped up? Well, I think we all recognize that's a that depends answer. Like, what was the magnitude of the car accident? What were the injuries sustained? What were the ramifications? Did you lose somebody in the car accident? Were there devastating injuries for you? The type of factors that someone experiences in that traumatic event really is one of the most shaping influences in the time period as somebody moves from lament towards resilience.
Yeah, and so the dealing with suffering and how we can move towards a place of resilience. Often, I mean, we read the Bible, and this is what I was thinking about before the podcast today. Is like, you know, we can often try to say like, well, like life is, you know, we have suffering in our life, we deal with suffering in our life, but you know, I want to live a good life. I want to be in a, you know, in a, we do, we strive for that. But also, when I read the Bible, I see only two places at the beginning and at the end where there's no suffering. And I see suffering throughout the whole Bible. And it's kind of like, I mean, you know, you don't glorify suffering in a sense of like, I go through suffering and this is a good thing that I go through suffering. I don't think God intended for that to be the purpose of creation. Of course he didn't. But what would you say about when we're encountering a life where we're faced with the reality that suffering exists? Mm-hmm. How would you say like one has to balance between like glorifying the idea that I'm going to suffer for God and be a martyr or these things that maybe someone might have a connotation toward versus like the opposite of that, which would be like, I want to like numb my life towards any kind of suffering and go towards a place of perfection where I could just maybe find perfect perfection on earth without any suffering. And every time I'm faced with suffering, I'm going to run away from it.
And then I'm trying to reframe the question or restate it. Mm-hmm. That suffering is not the purple heart of the Christian life. Mm. It's not this badge of honor that we want to put on and like be our matter of esteem. At the same time, Jesus told us in this world you will have trouble, that we have an adversary who is a roaring lion who's seeking to devour, that wants to make life as difficult as possible for us. And so the idea that we're going to live a life that's always air conditioned and has well shocked and the internet's never going to be slow and traffic's going to move smoothly and it's going to be a life of ease. Well, that is unrealistic. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's not fair how much one person suffers and how much another person suffers. Like to do a comparative analysis of amongst my peer group, I feel like I have had 17 pounds of suffering and somebody else has only had 4 mm-hmm. pounds of suffering. But man, I'm glad I'm not the person who's had 200 pounds of suffering. Like even that kind of comparative analysis mm-hmm. really doesn't serve us well. Mm-hmm. I want to live wisely. I don't want to inflict any undue suffering on my part by foolish or sinful choices. Mm-hmm. But as I live wisely and live on mission, I want to accept and respond well to whatever suffering is my lot in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also like beautiful that we have a God who did suffer, mm-hmm. who relates to us in our suffering in the sense that he did suffer all things and actually suffered, like you said, the 200 pounds of suffering versus 5 pounds of suffering. Like Christ suffered the most anyone would ever suffer.
Isaiah foretold that we were going to have a Messiah who was a man of sorrows, well acquainted with grief. Hebrews tells us that we have a great high priest who is, that phrase that's often translated, tempted. It carries both the sin and suffering connotation of both tempted and hard-pressed. Mm. So yes, has faced temptation, like the temptation account, but has also been hard-pressed, who has suffered in every way that we have. Mm-hmm. So that when we pray, we can approach the throne of grace with confidence. We never have to wonder when we talk to God about what we're going through, does he get it? Mm. Does he understand? Like it... Romans 8 tells us that every groaning of our heart is being translated by the Spirit directly to the ear of the Father, that even when it's groaning too deep for words, mm-hmm. even when we don't even know how to articulate what we're going through, but all we can say is, oh, God, it hurts. Mm-hmm. He gets it. Mm-hmm. And those are foundational elements that allow us to live with resilience. Mm-hmm.
What would you say is when we're faced with someone maybe that is a loved one, of course, and we want to help them in their suffering, it's very easy for, I think, Christians to be like, we'll trust God or mm-hmm. to, you know, just have more faith maybe. You know, these things that can be kind of triggering to someone who is encountering mm-hmm. very real suffering,
right.
where it's like, you know what? I don't want that right now. I want mm-hmm. something that... can you go there with me? Can you see how difficult it is for me right. to trust God or apply more faith in these circumstances? Mm-hmm. What do you think is a right way to empathize with someone, mm-hmm. with someone that's encountering real suffering?
Yeah. So my role as a friend, as a pastor, as a counselor. I want to be an accurate ambassador of God's heart towards this person. And maybe one of the passages that come to mind when we think about suffering and like what our posture and pace is in that. In Psalm 23, I think one of the most majestic verbs in all of Scripture is when it says that our great shepherd will walk with us through the valley of the shadow of death. That if I'm a shepherd and I'm walking with sheep through a place that merits the name the valley of the shadow of death, I am going to skedaddle those little sheepies. Like we are going to be moving because I don't feel safe. But a counseling hero of mine, David Pallison, he was fond of saying, we have a shepherd that moves at the pace of his sheep. That if we are his sheep and we are walking with a limp, we do not have to worry about being left behind. And when we are that friend and we're wanting to be an ambassador of the good shepherd to our loved one who is hurting, we move at their pace. Early on, as we talked about in the previous episode, that means leaving room for lament. That there is a time for grief and sorrow to be able to cry out, this is not the way that it's supposed to be, and to work on healing the damage that was done from those events. And we heal so that we can live with purpose. We don't want the pain of trauma and grief to become the defining mark of our life. We don't want suffering to get the last word on our life. We lament and heal so that we can live with purpose. And that's kind of the resilience aspect.
And then when we read in James, we read, count it all joy when you encounter various trials. How would you respond to that to someone that is reading this, going through trouble and trials, and they're saying, how could I count it all joy? How could I possibly have this contradiction where I have to count it all, where I not have to, but I see that I read, count it all joy. How could I count it all joy?
I don't think count it all joy means, I wish I could do that over again. Or even if I had to do it all over again, I would do it all over again. There's plenty of points in suffering where I think it is completely faithful to say, if I had to do it all over again, I would never do that. We think about, like, this is a maybe parallel passage to that one in James that I think we can use to rush people. Romans 8:28. God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. I think we often add a word into that that's just not in the text. And it really does weird things. We add the word more. That he'll work things together for more good. As if there is the weight of how much that was bad and hard, and there's the weight of what was good, and the good will outweigh the bad. I don't think there's any scales in that verse. God says he will be faithful to do good things amid the hard things and the bad things. And when we see his faithfulness, even amidst the hard things, we take joy in seeing his faithfulness. We take joy in seeing that he really did keep his promise that he would never leave us or forsake us. That he would be faithful, that he would persevere, that it is that element of his redemptive activity. We can take joy in that. And so I hope as a father, so my wife and I, we have two boys, and when they think through hard seasons as a kid, when we were there and we tried to be supportive, they don't look back on hard times and go, that was great. They look back and they say, Dad was there. I could count on him. There's a sense of assurance and confidence and joy and example that I can take from that. And I think that's the kind of thing that James is alluding to when he talks about taking joy amidst suffering. Mm. It's not that we're sadistic and we enjoy things that are painful.
Right.
It's that we see the faithful presence of God in the midst of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And God is always in control. And I think that that's a beautiful point to think about in those circumstances. Like when I'm going through something as a kid and I'm suffering as a kid, or I'm going through, you know, and my dad steps in and helps me out, that's where I can rest assured that he knows better than I do about a circumstance or something. And I think one of the most amazing things for me that comforts me is the ability that God has in his sovereignty and his ability and in his power and his grace is to turn things that were meant for evil into good. And I think that that's something that is just an incredible aspect of God's nature, where God doesn't inflict suffering on people intentionally, but he uses what the devil has wrought in people's lives and turns it into good, and he can actually make things into good, bad things into good. Like, that's like a beautiful comfort.
Right. And this is one where, even though we contextualize this in light of our previous conversation on lament, I think it's always good to help our readers stay, or our listeners stay, oriented. That yes to everything that you said, at the pace of each sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the season of victim and survivor, God is there to care, to be present, to heal and restore.
Mm.
And there is a promise that he has a purpose for you. And that what God has in front of you is good. That he wants to use you in ways that you find satisfying, that you are able to bless others, that results in meaningful relationships that are valuable in your life. And the pursuit of those things, that willingness that in our grief we do not give up hope, that those things are promised and that they are worth pursuing. That's what we're talking about in resilience. Take the time you need to lament, grieve, heal, recover. With purpose. The purpose of healing is not healing.
Mm-hmm.
When I am sick, the purpose of resting and that kind of thing and getting better is not the resting itself. It's what it allows me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no impatience in the great physician about what that healing process looks like, duration, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also not letting that hardship define your life in such a way that the hard thing that you've been through is so central that it overshadows the good things in front of you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important, what you mentioned about it's not somewhere to rest, and it's not in the healing itself. It's not in the resting itself, meaning there's an actual destination this is going toward. We are working towards this. These relationships, like you mentioned, the end result of what happens after a traumatic event, or what happens after suffering, that there is an after. It can be very easy, or it can be very difficult, rather, to see that end result, and very easy to stay in the suffering and in the lament, and almost in like a whirlpool be sucked into despair and not see the, and these are very real circumstances that people fall into.
And so I'll use an illustration from way back when I was a younger man. At this point, I've got gray hair for those who are just listening and can't see me. But I remember baseball was my game of choice, and there was a particular game. Had hit a ground ball, grounded into a double play. I was trying to beat it out at first base. Had a pretty severely sprained ankle. It was my senior year. I wanted to like get back out there and to be able to play. I didn't want that to be like the last hurrah of baseball for me. And so I was doing all the recovery, trying to do those things of like, there was a time period where like I had to go to the hospital. Actually, I had to go to the ER for that one. And like I was victim, survivor. And as I was doing the recovery, went in for one of the final checkups. And the doctor was doing all of his tests, and he probed and had electropods and all kinds of things that just felt like it was sadistic and unnecessary. But as he tested the ankle, he eventually looked at me and he said, "Stop limping on that ankle."
Hmm.
And I looked at him almost like he was being rude. Like, I did not appreciate that, sir. And he said, "Here's what's going to happen. If you keep limping on that ankle, you're never going to put your full weight on that ankle until you're in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And in the game, just by instinct, you're going to put more weight on that ankle than you've put on it at any time in a long period before that. And it's not because your ankle isn't recovered, because you haven't let that strength resume by putting the weight back on it. Mm-hmm. You're going to leave yourself more susceptible."
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten in the habit of limping, and I had become timid. Like, it just hurt every time I put any weight on it. And so I was timid towards putting weight on it. Mm-hmm. And for a time period, that was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
For a time period, it involved crutches. For a time period, right. It involved a brace.
Yeah.
For a time period, it meant not running. And then as there was this amping up of recovery, there came to a point where it's like, stop limping. And when we say resilience, we want to do all the recovery things as we should. But there comes a spot where God says, "I've got plans for you.
Mm-hmm.
Run."
Mm-hmm.
Like, pursue, go. That's and what I want in these two podcasts going side by side. Again, there is no impatience in God. He still has good purposes. This suffering does not get the last word on your life.
Mm-hmm.
God is not impatient with you. You don't be impatient with yourself. Even if there's people around you who don't understand, don't let them rush you.
Mm-hmm.
But also recognize there is purpose for your life, and you will find the greatest joy and fulfillment. And like that whole recovery lament process mm-hmm. will have its fullest fruit when you begin to give yourself fully to that resilient, pursuant phase of chasing hard after the things that God has for you.
I think that's beautiful. I mean, that just makes me think of the perspective that God has of the situation at large. Like you said, he's not impatient, but he's also like a shepherd would be in the face of understanding the next step and what's over the next mountain, where we need to get through, and seeing a sheep limping and just encouraging that sheep to push forward through a limp or something that might be good, actually, that you would not stay in a specific area, but there's a next step. There's a next step. And it made me think of a video that I saw recently that was about this beach goer who saw a bunch of sea turtles struggling to make it to the water. I don't know. Do you know about sea turtles? And they hatch, and then they hatch on the beach, and they have to make their way to the water. And it's actually a difficult process for these sea turtles when they're just hatched, and to get to the water is a struggle. But the seagoer or beach dweller, person on the beach, they saw this happening. They saw this process, and it was this person that was like, "Oh, I'm going to take them individually. I'm going to gather them all up into a bucket, and help them out, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go to the end of the water, and they don't forget the whole process of them having to make their way and the hard difficulty. They could get eaten. They could get snatched away, and some of them might die. But no. I'm going to make them all survive. We're going to get them to the water. We're going to release them into the water." And I saw this video, and the video, an expert came on and was like, this is really bad. Mm-hmm. This is not good. That person should never have touched those hatchlings. Those sea turtles should have been allowed to struggle through their way to the sea, because in that process, they're developing their muscles. They're learning, they're navigating, they're learning their orientation. They're strengthening themselves. And eventually when they get to the sea, they'll make it in scattered ways so that they're not released all at once, where they might attract a predator and then a predator might eat them all up. So there's multiple factors into why God designed it this way, where they actually would go through a period of suffering, you could call it, right, mm-hmm. of strengthening to make it to the sea.
And, you know, I think illustrations like that are really good. You can say the same thing about a caterpillar emerging from a cocoon to become a butterfly.
Yeah.
That the wrestling against and tearing out of the cocoon is what strengthens the wings well enough that once the butterfly is free, it is strong enough to fly. That there is something good being brought from that process. I think this is one where sometimes we immediately go to a causative influence. Like, we can look at God's design with sea turtles and butterflies and go, okay, that was part of his design. Was it necessary for me to have been through this calamity in order to whatever good thing is going to happen? That's where I think we overextend the metaphor of the sea turtle or the metaphor of the butterfly. Like, God promises to do good things. And yes, part of lament and resilience, it does result in strengthening. And that resolve that emerges is a good thing. Again, when we feel like, well, do I have to say that is why? And there's no other way that I could have learned this any other way. That gets into speculations. That I think if God wanted to be really clear about that, he would have been. And I don't think we have a spot where he says, you have to think about it this way. And so on this type of question, one thing that I think has been encouraging to me, maybe initially the frustrating part, then the encouraging part, what can be a little frustrating to me is that most of the Bible is written with an end-of-the-journey perspective. And so we read the Pentateuch, first five books of the Old Testament, and we know Joshua takes people into the Promised Land. We read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and we know Jesus rose from the grave. We read the epistles of everything that Paul was doing and striving, and the gospel makes it to the end of the earth. There's one book in the Bible that's a little bit different from that. It's not written from an end-of-the-journey perspective. It's written with a mid-journey perspective. That's the Psalms. That's why the Psalms have so many Psalms of lament. Psalms in the minor key. Psalms that are striving and straining like the sea turtle, like the caterpillar becoming butterfly. And those Psalms, like to me, Psalm 44, Psalm 88 are kind of prime examples. They're not near as neat as we want them to be. There is confusion. There's some anger. There's still trust. Like Psalm 88 is often called the black hole of the Bible. Like if you read it, there is not a single positive statement in the entire Psalm. Another counseling hero of mine, Paul Tripp, asking about Psalm 88. He's like, where is the hope in that? Like, where, what edifying thing do we get from a psalm that is just completely dark? It's like who it was spoken to. Even as the psalm was completely crying out words of despair, God says, you can come to me with that. That's lament. And I'm going to help you get to a place of resilience. So again, I think that's him not rushing us, but holding out this sense of hope that the work I am doing in you will be good. It will have good purposes. And in Psalm 44, Psalm 88, God doesn't require the psalmist to say, and I know you're up to something good, and this is going to be great. And at the end, I'm going to give you praise for it. It could just be authentically hard and grappling.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, how would you think about like someone that is, they maybe have reached that point of resilience, you could say, But then there would be maybe a time of relapse. I don't know if you would call it that, but some sort of like going back into or some triggering event that maybe they come out of it and then they go back to it. Is that something you've encountered in your experience?
I think my word there would be setback.
Yeah.
Like when I get to that point where, you know, lament is a past orientation.
Mm-hmm.
When we're grieving, we tend to measure time looking back.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 3 weeks since my loved one died. It's been 2 months since my loved one died. Then as grief is starting to run its full course, we start to look forward to things. Resilience is where we're looking forward to things again, and we're anticipating, we're striving, we're pushing towards good and meaningful things in our life.
Mm-hmm.
Do we go through times where we have a setback? Sure. We all do that in every area of life. Like if we think through a few times in my life, I have had a surgery. I don't know why doctors choose a gallon of milk as the weight of something you can and cannot carry after a surgery. I am someone who's prone to overdo it. I kind of think I'm okay for a while. And I'm like, and then, no, that was a setback. Shouldn't have done that. And, you know, that setback says I need to slow down. There's no shame in that. That I need a little more recovery. And when we're talking about things that are traumatic, sometimes, like what it is that creates the setback is not me being foolish like the couple of gallons of milk. That if somebody's traumatic experience was a severe car accident, and they get into a spot where they have to slam their brakes and they hear the tire skidding. But this time they miss the car in front of them by 3 or 4 feet. But for a period of time, they're on edge.
Mm-hmm.
And hypervigilance and some other things return for a period of time. That's a setback.
Mm-hmm.
It may aggravate some of the experiences of post-traumatic stress where, hey, for a season, I need to go back and do some of those things I was doing during the survivor phase to help offset that. That's a delay. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that pause. Again, that's where we can rest in the fact that we have a good shepherd who moves at the pace of his sheep.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us, when we're in that moment and it's something really hard, there is a human propensity to freak out. And we go, is this the way things are always going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact that this is now atypical from how things were actually helps give us a bit of assurance that this is not how things are always going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to have perspective, even when things are hard and we experience setback, that too is part of resilience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there someone in the Bible who you would say is a good example of someone who managed to face trial and tribulation well, or trauma well, or went through these phases you're describing well? I mean, I think of Job as one who I think of,
mm-hmm.
but is there anyone who has stood out to you as someone who, like, you aspire to as someone or an example of someone?
Somebody that I really admire in these kinds of ways is, I think, Paul is often much more honest than we give him credit for. Like, several times, Paul keeps talking about some major events in his life, like being shipwrecked and whipped.
Mm.
Like, you get a sense those were really shaping experiences for him. It was hard for him to get over that. Mm-hmm. It comes up several times. Paul is really honest about even times when, if we look at, I always get my Corinthians confused. It's in the early part of 1st or 2nd Corinthians where he is despairing of life. And he's like, brothers, I don't want you to be unaware that sometimes life is this hard. And there was a level of honesty. Philippians, one of his most personal books, And if you just compare Paul's writing style in Philippians to other books that he's written, like parents don't have favorite children. I think Paul did have a favorite church, and it was the church of Philippi. He was just uniquely close to them. And when he's doing that passage on anxiety towards the end of chapter 4, it's like, hey, remember what you saw in me when I had to practice these same things?
Mm.
Like, he wasn't above needing to say, hey, when I was with you, I struggled. And I didn't hide that from you. And I'm actually using the fact that things were so hard while I was with you as something that I want to steward. And so again, by the time it comes out in Philippians 4, we get the end of the journey, like fully metabolized mm-hmm. version of that. Mm-hmm. But we see this level of honesty about the early mm-hmm. stages and some sound bites throughout his writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes me think of course, David. Also, we do get to see that, like you had mentioned earlier, we do get to see a little bit of that, like in the middle of lamenting or in the middle mm-hmm. of, in the midst of these difficulties and these trying times. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is one where like I'm going to argue with me a little bit. Okay. I don't like stages language because stages make it sound like, oh, I'm done with that. Well, at this point, I'm 48 years old and I still get acne from time to time. It's like, oh, I thought that was supposed to be over when I wasn't a teenager anymore. But it happens. And a lot of what we're talking about aren't clear cut. Like I move past this and it's over and it mm-hmm. never reemerges. It's like, what kinds of things are foreground and what kinds of things are background in my life? And it doesn't mean some of those things will never crop up and become more forefront than they were. Mm-hmm. And so if we got folks listening and they're like, I get what you're saying and I can see it. It's just not as neat as what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You're right. It's not that neat. But if this gives you, if it gives you a way to put it into words and invite other people in, what we're saying is serving its purpose. So we'll go back to the puberty thing for a minute. An illustration that I use from time to time. When a parent talks with a preteen about puberty, they don't give them a lesson about everything that's going on and then look at them and say, do it. Get really moody. Let your voice start cracking at different times and like create foul odors in your body, like do it. We don't have that conversation as a call to action.
Mm-hmm.
We have that conversation so that as those things are happening, they feel less foreign. Mm-hmm. So that it's more likely for a meaningful conversation to happen. And so if our folks are listening and they're like, other than just being self-aware, what do I do with what we're talking about here? You talk to a friend and you may say, hey, I still feel like I'm in that season of lament. I'm recovering. Here are the things that how I've been impacted. Here's what I'm doing that's trying to offset those impacts. Would you pray for me? Both that I could grieve what happened and offset those impacts. Or maybe at another spot, you're like, I'm starting to gain an interest in this area. And I want to begin to embrace the early part of resilience with wisdom and patience. Because oftentimes by the time we get towards the end of lament, we're tired of it. Like you get me at the end of a surgery recovery and I get to do something. Part of the reason I live more than a gallon of milk is because I'm tired of not listening more than a gallon of milk. And my own exasperation with the experience is what makes it easy for me to overdo it. And if this conversation allows the folks who are listening going, I can invite the people who are close to me to be better sounding boards and better pacing agents for for my volitional part of this, the part that I get to choose, that I do it wisely, then you've gotten what you need from this conversation.
As we come to a close in our final 5 minutes, what are some resources or places people could go to find out more about these kinds of topics or to see more of you, mm-hmm. if they were interested in learning more about you or mm-hmm. reading some of your books?
Yeah. So for pretty much anything that I do, the main hub that you can find that is just bradhambrick.com. My first name, B-R-A-D, Hambrick, H-A-M-B-R-I-C-K.com. Lots of blog articles there, lots of free videos. If you go to bradhambrick.com/trauma, the forthcoming book I've got coming, Growing After Trauma, that what we've talked about today is more the material that somebody would find in steps 7, 8, and 9. What we talked about in the previous podcast, it's more the first 6 steps of the journey. But there's videos that just kind of me and the way that you hear me talking right now in a pretty folksy, kind of down-to-earth way. I walk and overview that book, and that part's all free.
Mm.
And if you listen to that and said, I'd like to work through it, you can pick up a copy of the book. It comes out in August. But I do the same thing. Like that same kind of model with depression, anxiety, with addiction, destructive relationships, with pornography, sexual addiction, betrayal in marriage, like creating resources that people can use for their own edification, mm-hmm. to use as a mentoring tool with other believers, to use to do group-based counseling. Those are the things that, at least in this season of my life, I feel like God has really laid on my heart as things mm-hmm. that I want to be passionate about, creating resources that churches can use, that they are tools, not just education.
Mm-hmm.
That this is something, it facilitates a relationship between me and another person. And if I get to use my level of experience so that the person in the helping role, they can be more of just a friend
mm-hmm.
and just a facilitator, but there's a structured process that allows that to have more impact. That delights
That's
me.
Good. So even if I'm not in Durham, North Carolina, I could still get counseling from you.
That you can, the way that we've talked through these things on those variety of subjects and other things you'll find on my site, you can hear me talk like this a lot.
That's good. That's good. Do you still prefer, like, would you suggest to someone that's maybe faced with in that process, or if they're in some serious suffering, like, what would you say is some signs that maybe they should go seek out someone in person, or mm-hmm. or maybe is it okay that they just do it with you online? Is that okay too? Like, mm-hmm. or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. So my encouragement is, don't face things like this alone. And so sometimes, just having a structured process and a good friend, you're going to find that that's adequate. Sometimes you're going to, and again, that's part of, we do that in the early part of the Growing After Trauma resource. Like, what are some indicators that meeting with somebody with more experience would be beneficial? So things like, my sleep is getting disrupted on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
I lose my sense of appetite and I just can't eat. Like, those are things where my body is telling me, like, I'm having a hard time settling into the here and now. But again, in terms of things that are a gap I want to fill, I know for a church like Greater Grace, you guys have got folks all over the world. And in different areas, there's different types of resources. I don't want there to be a place where somebody says, I don't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
That if I can provide a resource and there's a couple of believers around you, I want you to have some embodiment of God's care that can begin to be facilitated through God's people, so that promise that God said he will never leave you or forsake you, that you have a very tangible sense that God is keeping that promise. If you're in a spot where you've got more quality resources around you, praise God. If you're not, I want you to know he has never left you or forsaken you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tool you can use to connect with people in a meaningful way about the hard things you're going through.
That's really good. That's Thank you for that. That's amazing. I think that just about wraps things up here at in the Grace Hour studio. Thank you so much, Brad, for coming on and being with us this weekend and part of this week here right before our convention. So we're wrapping up here at the Grace Hour podcast, but you can find more of Brad's material at his website, as well as some of the recordings, the pre-recordings that we've had on our website and our YouTube page. And thank you for joining us today on the Grace Hour podcast. And we hope to see you soon. Thank you.